Our body's been created to be able to adapt and deal with all kinds of bad insults. Let's say you're putting a foundation in your house or you're building a new brick wall, and you go, oh, I'm starting to run out of bricks, and I don't have any new bricks, and so what am I going to do? Oh, here's a shoe. I'll put that where a brick was. Oh, here's a styrofoam cup, and so we'll stick the styrofoam cup in there, and it takes the place, but it's not going to make a strong wall.
Right.
If you build your wall like that, now you're going to be missing things, and things are going to go slower. And really, it takes work and time and a lot of effort to be able to bring in the new minerals and help your body excrete and dump the toxic minerals.
This is the Gutsy Health Podcast, your go-to destination for uncomplicated, practical, and affordable tools for your wellness education with Jeannie Grover. Are you ready to become a self-healing champion? Let's go.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's podcast on the Gutsy Health Podcast. It's funny because we were having a meeting this morning. I was having a meeting this morning with Dr. Wright, and all of a sudden he starts talking about minerals and testing minerals and ratios of minerals. And I was like, pause. I was like, can you just send everything you were talking about today on a text to me? And that's what we're going to podcast about today. And so this is the genius way in which we come up with podcast ideas. It's literally like we're having conversations and I'm like, wait a second, people need to hear this. I wish, Dr. Wright, that I could just have like a microphone around us 24/7 and then just take like little clips of like our conversations and our meetings and be like, okay, everyone needs to hear this right now. So
yeah, I've actually been told that before. They said, can I follow you around with a microphone? There's so much information here. I had somebody else say, well, you know, it's just more content. Every time something comes up, just more content. And share with our listeners.
I pause people in conversations like, wait a second, I need to record this. Like, just repeat everything you said, or just send me a text about everything you said so we can talk about it or record it or do like a reel or a post or a podcast. You guys, that's how we came up with today's podcast episode about vitamins. Well, we're not talking about vitamins. We're mainly talking about minerals. And I think minerals are kind of like that middle child that doesn't get enough attention. And it really should. Because minerals are so important to everything and everyone is very mineral depleted. And how we got onto this topic again is you did an oligo scan on me last week and it was showing how all my minerals were just very, not very depleted, but they were consistently low. Even with like the diet that I eat, the supplements that I take, mine were low. It doesn't help that I just had a baby and I'm breastfeeding. But today we're going to be talking about why it's so important to have minerals, what minerals actually do in your body. Best sources of minerals. And so, Dr. Wright, take it away. Tell listeners today, why are minerals so important? Let's talk about what they do in the body and how we got to this place where everyone is just so mineral deficient.
Well, that's a lot. Let's unpack that. Okay, minerals, do you need them or not? Absolutely. In medical school, we learned about physiology and we learned about biochemistry. And I'm not going to bore anybody with biochemistry today, although for those of us geeks who love it, there's nothing boring about it. Biochemistry is the flip side of nutrition, meaning it's the stuff that happens in our body to turn things on, turn things off, repair things, and make us create health. Minerals are cofactors that allow other things to work. So what's a cofactor? Think of it like this. If this wants to go this way and touch here, it needs a cofactor called the hands that are holding it.
Mm.
So if you have a cofactor that is missing, then the thing doesn't work as well. So if you have an enzyme that, let's talk about glucose tolerance factor, that's an enzyme that helps us to use glucose properly. If you don't have high appropriate amounts of glucose tolerance factor, you need the cofactor chromium to make it work properly. And so the minerals are required for that. Some minerals are also an integral part of something else. So if you're missing it, for example, if we're talking about thyroid hormone, that requires the mineral iodine. When the thyroid makes the hormone T4, it's using four iodines and attaching them to the thyroid hormone. And we're going to talk about that on another day, just for, you know, a shout out for something new that's coming.
I want to give the teaser because I think people are just going to freak out. You guys, Dr. Wright's going to be teaching advanced classes around anatomy and physiology. And his first class that he's going to be teaching is actually about the thyroid hormone and other cofactors with the thyroid. And so look out for that webinar. Look out for that class. It's coming in the next few months, probably May and June of 2024. Going back to cofactors, though, One of my favorite cofactors, I just want to interject this really fast, that I learned about in nutrition school was actually copper, because copper helps you to recycle iron. And so a lot of people are like, I'm taking a bunch of iron and I'm getting my labs tested and I'm still depleted. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't an iron issue. This is a copper issue, because you're taking all this iron, but your body isn't recycling iron. Your body has this very, very intelligent mechanism to recycle iron, because iron is so important to living. And so if you have copper, then you have an enzyme activity happening that when your red blood cells die, you reuptake the iron that is released from their dead particles and you reuse it again. But if you have low copper, that's not happening. And I tell people to go on Organ Complex all the time because it has high copper. So I'm like, this isn't an iron issue. This is a copper deficiency issue. And most of the time people take Organ and then they're like, oh, my levels are back to normal again.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you bring up copper, because copper is also crucial for repair of tissues. But one of the things I wanted to tell you about and talk to you about today is most of the minerals have an antagonist. So in the form of copper, you have zinc as the antagonist. Mm-hmm. And zinc is necessary for tissue rebuilding and so on. If you're deficient in zinc, it means you're generally toxic in copper, and that can cause all kinds of mood problems, think like PMS.
Mm-hmm. So you need a good amount of zinc for a good amount of copper. You can't have them out of balance.
That's right. You need them absolutely balanced. And so if anything is weighted one way or another, you're going to be out of balance and you're going to get symptoms from that. And so if you're toxic in copper and you're getting a lot of PMS symptoms, you know, if that gets really bad, we have a disease that actually caused that. It's a toxicity of copper. But the reality is we might be treating you with whatever medicine we're trying to help you not have PMS with, when in fact, what we need to do is figure out, oh, you have an excess of copper. Let's rebalance that out with appropriate amounts of zinc so that your symptoms go away. And then you're growing like you should. You're recycling your iron like you should, but you're not getting mood swings from the excess amount.
So I'm going to ask you a hard question. Bear with me. If we need to like pause and like go and reference things, that's totally fine. But which minerals have their balancing other mineral that you can list for listeners today so they can be aware of it?
Well, that's a class. I'll keep it simple.
Keep it really simple.
So the big balancers are sodium and potassium, copper and zinc, magnesium and calcium. I could go on and on and on about all of these.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the biggest ones probably. You know, I like to think if you flex your muscle, let's say I'm going to move over so you can see my arm. Mm-hmm. If I flex my bicep, that muscle was using calcium to contract. At the very same time, that muscle was using magnesium to relax. So if you're excessive in your calcium, you're going to be prone to tight muscles.
Mm-hmm.
That means if you're deficient in magnesium, you're going to be prone to tight muscles. The extreme of that is heart failure. Okay. But, you know, most people are not that severe, but they're getting more anxiety because they're excessively high in calcium and deficient in magnesium, at least in balance wise.
Do you know what's crazy is when you did my oligo scan, one thing that you mentioned was that how low my magnesium was. And here's the thing is I radically supplement magnesium like no other person. I'm an evangelist when it comes to magnesium. I'm talking about magnesium on Instagram at least twice a month because of how important it is. I take about 600 to 700 milligrams of magnesium a day, and I was still deficient. And so here's a statistic, about 98% of Americans are low in magnesium. I have read over 1,000 labs where we test magnesium, because we test magnesium in all the labs the health coaches do, as you know, Dr. Wright. And I have seen 4 people have optimal magnesium levels. 3 of those people were doing high doses of magnesium supplementation. And so this is why it's so important to test, because, you know, every now and then we don't have to become like radical testers and do all the tests under the sun. But like, I think at least like for maintenance once a year, just at least once a year, right? If not twice, where you're just saying, okay, I'm taking all the supplementation. Am I balanced? Right. And so it was so good for me to see, okay, I actually need more magnesium, even though I am taking 5 milligrams per pound of weight, because magnesium is used in so many things and is like so crucial for not only mental health, but muscle health, heart health, digestive health, enzymatic activity, all the good things under the sun.
So, you know, to add some complication to that for the listeners, because I know they really want to understand things, you can take more magnesium, but if you're still pounding the calcium, you're not going to get there because they're out of balance. And so if you look at the amount of calcium you should be doing to magnesium, if we're talking from a physiologic point of view, it's usually, I've read a lot of things on this, and usually I figure it's around two parts calcium to one part magnesium. The problem is the standard American diet, which by the way, you shouldn't be eating anyway, but the standard American diet is it has massive amounts of calcium in it and very little magnesium. So even if you're trying to eat healthy, if you're still doing a normal diet that's rich in calcium and not doing enough leafy green vegetables, which the leafy green vegetables have to be grown on organically grown, nutrient-dense, mineral-replenished soil in order to have the magnesium in there, which is hard at best to find. And so our diets, even if it's a pretty good diet, are very rich in calcium and not very rich in magnesium. And so I learned from one of my mentors early on that, so even though the amount that you need is two parts calcium to one part magnesium, the reality is what you're getting, you need to supplement with two parts magnesium to one part calcium. And these are sloppy numbers. It's individual for everyone, but we're trying to compensate for what the body, what we're doing. Right. So if you're eating dairy, guess what? Calcium, we're getting lots of it.
It's funny too, because I actually love dairy. That's probably why I needed so much magnesium. Let's go to, you brushed in it a little bit, but why are we so deficient in minerals? And I'm glad that people are waking up to the importance of minerals, and they're saying minerals, 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 right? How did we get here where everyone is just so deficient? You mentioned the standard American diet, but why else?
This goes way, way, way back. Actually, one of my mentors, one of the books I read, he actually said something that makes sense. And where we started was the refrigerator. So what happened when we had the refrigerator? Well, all of a sudden, we could store food and not eat it fresh. And as things started to improve, we started making things of modern convenience, which I'm a huge fan of refrigeration. I'm not going to get rid of mine. But what happened is we used to cook over a fire. And what happened, you burn stuff, and then you take all those ashes, which are alkaline-rich minerals, and then you put those back into your soil. And so when we stopped using wood as a source of fuel, because we could start using indoor electricity and other things, and we started refrigerating things so we didn't have to smoke them and or salt them, we stopped adding salt to our meats and to our foods to preserve them, we stopped adding a lot of those trace minerals to our food, and then we stopped putting all of that ash and out those alkaline minerals back into our soils. So in the 1930s, they actually had a government organization meeting in the Congress to figure out what they were going to do with the depletion of minerals in the American soil. Well, that was in the 1930s.
Yeah, that's insane.
30 plus years ago.
I was going to say, they probably don't have meetings like that anymore. They just don't care because everything is so fast farmed that it's just there's nothing to see here, folks. And it's very, very sad.
So that happened. And then somebody figured out that salt actually was the cause of hypertension. And so they said, well, you should restrict sodium. Well, so if it's good for 3% of the population that has sodium sensitivity, then it's probably good for the other 97% as well. Even though there was a recent study I just read about that said that removing salt changed the blood pressure about 5 points, which is hardly negligible when you're talking about severe hypertension. And we also started having people with iodine deficiencies in iodine deficient belts where people are starting to get goiters and thyroid problems. And so they said, well, let's save these people and let's get some iodine into their world. And so we started adding iodine to salt. And just as a little tangent, iodine does not taste good. You ever taste it? It tastes pretty nasty. And for those of us who swallow nasty things, it's not a big deal. But for the rest of the world, they care. And so they put iodine in salt. But well, first of all, they refined the salt, took out all the trace minerals, so it's nice and white. And then they added iodine to it, which was fine. Not the best source of iodine, but it's fine. But since iodine tastes bad, they added sugar to it so that the salt would taste good. Because sugar is clumpy, they added aluminum to it as an anti-caking agent. So now if you sprinkle your food with iodized salt, you're getting sugar, which can contribute to diabetes. You're getting aluminum, which can contribute to all kinds of bad things, including Alzheimer's. And, you know, if you want to do a, if you want to fact check me, go look at your iodized table salt and you'll see sodium chloride, which is refined salt, taking all the trace minerals out. And then that you can see dextrose, which is sugar, and aluminum anti-caking agent. And so what I preach to my patients daily is you should be adding salt to everything, and it should be sea salt. I don't work for any of these companies. I have no interest in any of them except General Health. And so the best salts out there are going to be Celtic sea salt and real health, real salt from Redmond. And I would dare say that Dead Sea salt is good. Himalayan salt's okay. It's a little bit more dirty than the other ones, but it's still far superior to iodized salt.
Right.
And you can get iodine from other places like kelp. There are supplements out there that have a good amount of iodine in there. Your doctor can write you a prescription for Lugol solution, which you can put a drop on your skin and paint it on. And so there's other sources of iodine without using iodized salt.
You know, it's interesting. I used to live with this. I've had Ely on the podcast, and I used to live with him and his wife, Sona, back in the day when Tristan was in his master's program, and we lived in Colorado. And his wife, Sona, would have her own gardens and do her own compost. I remember the enormous amount of energy it took for her to make this incredible compost. She had bunnies, so it had like all this great bacteria and all this like digested food that the bunnies would eat. She would feed the bunnies the leftovers from the vegetables from her garden. She would take all the leftover foods that no one ate and would go into her compost. And then you would see the compost, and it was this rich, mineralized dirt. Like you could smell it. Like it just, it smelled so organic. I can't think of a better word. And you know that even organic farms are not doing that these days. Like the amount of energy it would take to create good compost, they would need a whole side business and they would make no money. Because you have to wait a year or two for all of the food that you've collected to compost, basically, before you can put it in your gardens and your soils and enrich the soils back with. So I like what you said about the soot and all that. It makes so much sense. And just not getting good enough compost, we're really replenishing our soil with nothing. We're growing stripped food. We're growing stripped food and stripped soils. And our bodies are literally stripped of minerals now. And so if you are not emphasizing minerals in your life, in your kid's life, like you should be. It should really become like to the forefront of your thoughts when it comes to healthy living, healthy eating, healthy lifestyles, because it's like the electricity in your body. You need these minerals for healthy cellular function, healthy bone building and repairing. And Dr. Wright, you can talk a lot about that, right? Like minerals. Let's talk about certain minerals and mineral ratios in the body and what they do.
We talked briefly about calcium and magnesium. Zinc and copper is required for, you know, bone growth, mental health, and so on. Let's talk about sodium, potassium. So when your doctor measures these, you're measuring the in-use form, meaning your body's going to take that calcium out of the blood and use it. So the levels in your blood are very tightly regulated. So if you measure them in the blood, the problem is you're not going to necessarily see what the storage is of them. You're only going to see what is about to get used. So you need to do a different system to be able to measure them. Sodium, potassium. Sodium and potassium are literally what makes the cell go. Mm-hmm. So if you think of our bodies as an electrical system, you have to create a static electricity charge on the outside of the cell wall so that you can power it to do something. How does that work? It uses a thing called a sodium potassium ATPase, which is a fancy way of saying you have an enzyme that creates a positive and negative charge on the inside and the outside of the cell. If those electrolytes are out of balance, you're not going to have as strong of a charge, which means the cell is going to be running on an empty battery. Everything inside the cell is going to function slower. The nerves send a signal via these sodium and potassium gradients. And so it's required. Sodium and potassium are absolutely mandatory and crucial. And if you don't have them, you're going to have a problem. Now, it's interesting, legally speaking, in our country, the FDA has decided that if you want to add more than 99 milligrams of potassium to a supplement, you have to put a warning on the label that says bad things. And I'm going to paraphrase, bad things will happen to you if you take too much potassium.
Which is insane.
And then they went one step further and said, well, if we doctors give you a drug that is a diuretic, that is a potassium wasting diuretic for your blood pressure, we can actually deplete you of potassium and you can die. And so that's bad.
Right.
And so now we have a pharmaceutical grade potassium, and it's potassium chloride, so it's not a bad thing. It's a great big humongous horse pill, but it's giving much larger doses in the form of a drug because the FDA in their wisdom has suggested that we don't want people to hurt themselves. So we're going to make sure that all of the supplements that have potassium in it are less than 99 milligrams. You can check this on all your supplements. Anything and everything that has supplemental potassium in it is going to have 99 milligrams, no more than that. Now, here's the trick. Some companies found that if they add potassium-rich foods to their supplement, they're not adding potassium as an ingredient, so therefore they can add as much as is in the supplement. I like people to eat, for their potassium source, I like people to eat bananas, but I prefer them to be slightly green because then you get the nutrients to help optimize digestion and you're not getting all sugar. And or coconut water, and actually one cup of coconut water has more potassium per cup than I can legally give you in a supplement per pill.
How interesting.
You know, there's lots of electrolytes out there, and one of them is potassium is coconut water based, which means that it has a richer amount of potassium in it because of that. Now, I'm a huge fan of all the electrolytes. I think that all the natural ones, you should find the one that fits your body the best, that you like the flavor of. Because if you're swallowing it, but you don't like the flavor, you're not going to keep doing it. You know, with the electrolytes, those are typically sodium, potassium, chloride, and some sugar. Electrolytes need the sugar because that's part of the electrolytes, but it shouldn't be so much sugar that you're putting yourself on the road to diabetes land.
Mm-hmm.
And so I personally drink 2 to 3 scoops of an electrolyte drink every day because my body requires more electrolytes. And I found that's an easier way to get the salt, sodium, potassium, and all the rest of the trace minerals into my body in a way that I don't miss it. Like I'm drinking this as part of my hydration. So it's not like, oh, I forgot to take my salt today. I'm doing it in the form of electrolytes.
One thing for pregnant women that I want to express is the uptake of minerals while you're pregnant, especially during that first trimester, because the majority of Americans are already depleted on minerals, right? But now you're growing this entirely new human. At first, you're growing in a new organ. And like so many women get such terrible morning sickness because they don't have enough mineral stores for this. And so they're exhausted. They can't get out of bed. They can't digest their food. And what they really could do to help mitigate that or lessen the blow of morning sickness is really hydrating with minerals. Dr. Wright, everyone's going to be asking me in my DMs, what is your favorite? And so what are your favorite minerals to take? What is it that you're drinking every day?
Well, I use real salt because they're local. I like them, and because it's coming out of the ground, so it's clean and it's a little bit gritty. So people who are like really, really, really small salt particles, they don't love Redmond salt, but that's the one I use. And I've tasted a number of other ones. My favorite one for my taste buds is the Relight from Redmond. I've tried a number of other ones and I like them as well, but that's the one that my body responds to.
I think Relight has, theirs is so great. I think Just Ingredients has her own as well.
I like hers.
Yeah, hers are really great. I love for kids, because they won't drink the Redmond. They say it's too salty, but one of my favorites is Superior. My kids love the taste of Superior and real stevia, not like the synthetic stevia. Can we talk a little bit about trace minerals? What's the difference between a mineral and a trace mineral?
So a regular minerals like calcium, potassium, sodium, chloride, and so on, those are minerals that are required for standard physiologic function. The trace minerals are the ones that you need in much smaller quantities. So those are going to be measured in micrograms or picograms. And so they're a lot smaller. Those are things like molybdenum, manganese, lithium. So you don't need large amounts of these, but you still need them. And so manganese is required for metabolism, detoxification. Lithium is required to grow brain cells and is functional for optimal brain function. Actually, lithium comes in a drug, but the form that they give in a drug is lithium carbonate. And that tends to be a more toxic version of the mineral that's actually very healthy for us. And it tends to be stabilizing to moods. Other ones, I mean, there's something like 60, some, I don't remember the exact number, but like 60 different trace minerals that we need in very small amounts. And interestingly enough, the body is wise. The body is smart. The way, I mean, our body's been created to be able to adapt and deal with all kinds of bad insults. And so if you're deficient in something, your body's going to go, well, okay, I can't make this process work very well. I don't have this particular mineral, but oh, I've got this toxic one over here. I'm going to insert this toxic one over here and make it go, because at least if the toxic one's there, it means that the enzyme will still be working. And maybe it'll only be working at like 0.2%. Working at 0.2% is better than not working at all. And so, you know, it's kind of like if you're trying to build your brick wall, let's say you're putting a foundation in your house, or you're building a new brick wall, and you go, oh, I'm starting to run out of bricks, and I don't have any new bricks. And so what am I going to do? Oh, here's a shoe. I'll put that where a brick was. Oh, here's a styrofoam cup, you know, left in the garbage because, you know, he went to some place and got us. And so we'll stick the styrofoam cup in there and it takes the place, but it's not going to make a strong wall. Build your wall like that. Now you're going to be missing things and things are going to go slower. And really it takes work and time and a lot of effort to be able to bring in the new minerals and help your body excrete and dump the toxic minerals.
So toxic minerals, what would those be exactly? Are we talking like heavy metals?
Yep.
So what you're saying is you'll have more of an affinity to store toxic metals if you don't have enough minerals. Is that correct?
Yep.
That is wild to me. Holy cow. So I love that analogy of building a house and putting like trash as bricks versus like, say the minerals are bricks. And you didn't have enough. And so now you're putting heavy metals, which are trash. When it comes to remineralizing and restoring your tissue and restoring those bricks, how do we do that? If we start to put in the minerals, will our body naturally take out the heavy metals?
Yes and no. So I like to keep things simple because I'm just a simple doctor. I like simple stuff. Mm-hmm. And I find when Einstein said, if you can't explain it to a five-year-old, then you don't understand it. So the first thing I like to do is make sure you're putting in what needs to be there. So put stuff in, and then your body's going to slowly start taking out the bad stuff. The bad stuff, unfortunately, though, really sticks to us efficiently. So while you can put in the good stuff, it's not necessarily going to reject the bad stuff. So you have to put in something that's going to grab or bind to the bad stuff and help it to exit. The next step is the first step, if I'm going to deal with heavy metals, the first step is get nutritional, lots and lots of good, healthy trace minerals in. Step two isn't let's grab the bad stuff and pull it out. Step two is open up the exits so that when you grab the stuff, you have a place to take it out. Because if you take out the trash, but sometimes my kids have been known to take out the trash, meaning they take it out of the bin, it's in the bag, and they put it right into the counter. Well, that wasn't complete. All you did is you took it out of the bin, but you didn't take it out. You have to take it out to the street, which means you need to poop it out, pee it out, breathe it out, and sweat it out. And so you have to make sure that the exits are working for adding something that will remove them. Because if you remove them and the exits are closed or partially blocked, all you've done is just reposition it from point A to point B, instead of point A to the exit.
It's interesting because many listeners that have been listening for a long time, they understand the order of healing that we teach in the academy. Like you said, you have to make sure your exits are working, your plumbing is working before you can start pulling things out. I've had people try to start liver resets and detoxification programs before fixing their gut, before fixing their mitochondria, before supporting their liver. And they have the work, like some people are even throwing up, right? Because they just feel so sick because their body doesn't have the required energy and tools to really get rid of that stuff. But yeah, so it's so important, you guys, to make sure that your body is ready to release, to pull out toxins. And that requires an enormous amount of energy. It's like going on a shopping spree, but you have no money. You definitely want to make sure when you go on a shopping spree, you have a lot of money. And so there's an enormous amount of biological energy necessary in order for your body to get rid of all this gunk in the body.
I want to comment on that because there's a lot of practitioners who say, oh, you should go after the heavy metals first.
Oh my God.
I have all kinds of problems with that. That's my bias. Here's the reason why. They say, well, you need to remove the heavy metals from your mitochondria so the mitochondria will make energy so that you can do the detoxification. The problem I see with that is, yes, while that's true, you don't have enough energy to get them out. And all you did was repurpose them for other places. Right. And I don't see people getting well. And heavy metals are a long process. So I'd rather go after things like, let's get the mitochondria resuscitated. That can be pretty quick by comparison. Right. Let's get the gut working. That can be pretty quick by comparison. Let's remove some of these infections that you've been dealing with for a while. That's pretty quick by comparison. Well, I've been working on my own heavy metals for decades. They don't come out quickly. And I feel way better now than I did in my 20s. And it's taken a long time and it's taken a lot of work. But anyway, so I don't go after heavy metals first. But there are simple things that you can do to help your body start dumping them, but you still have to make sure the exits are open.
I love that you've mentioned a few things first. So make sure that you're dealing with co-infections. Make sure you're dealing with the foundational stuff, nutrition, sleep, stress, like mineral balancing, the co-infections that you mentioned. And then you're telling people to deal with the heavy metals. Like, because can we like coexist with them temporarily until we can get them out? And then is detoxing heavy metals kind of going to just be a lifetime process? Because as we're getting heavy metals out, we're getting new ones coming in all the time just because of the life that we live in.
It's a lifestyle, but you can get bulk amounts of them out. You know, if you get 50% of the mercury out of your body's going to be more than 50% better.
That's true. And if mercury is an issue for you, because here's the thing, some people don't even know which heavy metals they're dealing with. You know, before you did the oligo scan on me, I was like, oh my gosh, I bet my lead is like through the roof. I interviewed Eric Everything Lead on Instagram. He shows you all the sources of lead on like bottles and plates and like things that we eat off of and drink out of, right? And it's like, oh my gosh, there is so much lead everywhere. It's not just something of our past. It's something that is currently being used. Like if you have someone who goes hunting or has any kinds of bullets, like the bullets are made of lead. You have to buy bullets that are specifically not lead. And so if you have bullets laying around and your kids are playing with them, let's hope your kids are not playing with bullets.
Please don't.
Right. Or you're just holding the bullet, like you're exposing your body to lead and that's coming off of the bullet onto your skin. Another story I want to share about heavy metals, because I just want to preface this and say, as I'm sharing these stories, I don't want to provoke any fear. I think we are now in a day and age where we can calmly say heavy metals is something that we coexist with, right? Yep. We coexist with, and it's something that we manage, right? It's like, I wear clothes and I have to wash them at the end of the week because they get dirty. We live in this world and we have to be mindful of heavy metals and just detox them at a pace that honors your energy and your bandwidth, because that's the world that we live in. So now I'm going to share the story, and I've shared it before in the podcast, but if you're hearing it for the first time, yay. So a few years ago, we had a client whose heavy metals showed up on a hair analysis, and she was doing our Lyme protocol and she was feeling amazing, but she wanted to now address the heavy metals. And so her husband was a physicist that had a tool that is like a gun that you pointed at foods and objects, and it measures how much lead is in them. So she was going through all of her foods and she was measuring how much lead was in it and how many heavy metals were in it. And when she came up on her organic spinach and organic mixed greens, the heavy metal numbers were through the roof. And she was like, this can't be right. She went to conventional produce greens and it was, again, high as the organic. So they called the manufacturer of this machine and they're like, actually, this is a very well-known thing amongst organic leafy green farmers, especially spinach farmers, because they know even in organic soils, these leafy greens absorb heavy metals and there's nothing that they can do about it. Potatoes and carrots as well. So we eat vegetables to, one, give us vitamins and minerals, but unfortunately, we just live in a very, very toxic world where they are also going to absorb other nefarious things that we just be mindful of and then take precautions, like occasionally doing a spring clean of our body, occasionally doing a liver reset, occasionally just taking binders like Pectisol or biotoxin binder, and just slowly eliminating these heavy metals out of our bodies. It's prevalent everywhere. People know this, the higher ups know this, and there's nothing they're going to do about it. Kind of like the government realizing, oh, we have low minerals. What are we going to do about it? Nothing. We're just going to let people go about their way and pretend ignorance is bliss. It just is. It is what it is. Don't let that scare you, but recognize that heavy metals is definitely one of those things that you want to keep on your radar. You want to be mindful of it. it could be something that is affecting you. It might not be. So go ahead and get tested and see how prevalent it is. As you said before, make sure you have enough minerals so that your body isn't pulling heavy metals to use as building blocks. Which leads me to my next question. How do people get tested for heavy metals and how do they test their minerals? What are the best and most efficient ways?
So let's talk about testing first. If your standard medical doctor is going to run this test, they're going to want to run a blood test. It's convenient. The problem with the blood test is heavy metals do not live in the blood unless they're on the way in or on the way out. So if you just drank some water that has lead in it, it will be in your blood, but after 48 hours, it's going to be deposited where it wants to live forever, which is usually your bone or your brain. Mercury, same thing. And so because of the way the biochemistry and the physics of the way these minerals stick to us, they don't live in the blood. And so measuring them is not going to be good. Measuring the minerals in the blood as well doesn't really work because a normal blood test for a, say, zinc or copper is a serum test, which means it's in the liquid form of the blood, not in the red blood cell of the blood. So if you want to know your levels, you have to do a red blood cell test because that's going to give you a better marker of storage. Now, insurance frowns on those tests. And, you know, if you want to do them, you can get a good, okay marker. But the reality is they're not really telling you what your storage is. They're just indicating what they are. Some doctors will do what's called a heavy metal challenge, which will give you something that will remove it from you, meaning it'll grab it from you. Then you'll usually urinate it out. We catch the urine, catch the sample. And the good news is we pulled it out so we can see what came out. Problem with that is each of those minerals has an affinity for the chelator, the remover. And so that chelator is going to preferentially grab, say, lead or mercury and less so, say, aluminum or cadmium.
So it's going to be a little biased.
So it's in
its readings.
Up until a few years ago, that was the best option we had. They did a lot of that.
No, wasn't there a chelator that wasn't legal in the United States and you had to get it from a different country?
Yeah, and I think it was workshopping well.
Wasn't it DMSO or something like that?
No, DMSO is legal here. You can get it at your local farm supply. There's DMSA, which you can
that one.
Prescription here.
I think it was that.
And then there's DMPS, which is an injectable, and that one works too as well. But no, there was actually another one that they were pioneering in Europe, and it worked really well for getting metals out, and it was extremely safe. The FDA, they're trying to protect this, and so it's not here.
With these binders, do people feel sick as it's coming out? Because I've had people do that urine thing, and they have felt really, really ill as it's pulling out these heavy metals.
You know, that's the thing, is if you're doing a challenge like that, it's kind of a trial of therapy. It's like, but if you feel really bad, and you don't think it's worth to break it, that's just a red flag. That's kind of the oil light that says the reason why you're sick is because of heavy metal. Mobilize them, you're more likely to feel. And so there's some value to that, but I like instant gratification. I'll be honest, I like it. And so when I came across, when one of my mentors actually showed me the Omega scan, I was shocked and surprised. Some of my other mentors do hair analysis where they take some hair and throw it off to the lab and they measure the mineral of the nitty huddle. And in my research, what I found was the technology they're using for their hair analysis, which is called HTMA, is actually the same technology as Omega scan, which is photoquectrometry. So we're actually using a laser that refracts off of the minerals, and the camera in it will measure the refracted light, and that correlates with minerals.
For instance, over this cell,
we use the laser, be it on the palm of the hand, 4 points, staring basically in a matter of seconds, we have this there.
Which is incredible. It's such a neat little thing. If you are curious as to how it works, go to Provo Health or Gutsy Mom and take a look at how it works. It's really phenomenal. Now, you mentioned something about heavy metals being stored in the bone and the brain. When this is measuring tissue levels, it's probably not an accurate gauge of bone and brain heavy metal levels, just tissue levels. Is that correct?
We look at tissue levels because, and we would extrapolate, well, if it's man, it's also in the bone of the brain. The reality is some of these are going to be more concentrated in the bone and in the brain.
We're saying we get the best test that we can do by doing the photophotometry.
So let's talk a little bit more about the spectrophotometry, because from what I understand, like, this isn't hokey, not that things out there are hokey, but this isn't like a pseudoscience thing. Like, they use this technology to measure gases and minerals and metals on other planets in outer space. And so it's the same technology that we're using for measuring metals and minerals in our tissues. So this...
And it's also used in mining industries. I mean, so in industry, like, this is the go-to. If you want to know what's in the soil, the dirt, the rocks, this is the go-to technology to use that.
Why do doctors not use this in their practices? Because this is so non-invasive. It's simple. It's easy. It's fast. It's literally like 3 seconds and you have results.
Aside from the company that uses, and this is a French-based company. And so the company that uses it here in the United States that has the rights to it, they're not great marketers. We might change that for them, but they're not great marketers. I learned about it from one of my mentors who taught me all kinds of cool stuff. His name is Lee Cowden. If anybody knows who he is, he's a gem. And he really has taught a lot of us doctors a lot of really amazing things. We did the testing and then I wanted to do some backup. I was like, okay, he told me about this. I like the idea, but is it valid? And so I started looking at all the different technologies that are out there. I was looking at hair tissue mineral analysis. I was looking at the chelators. And when it comes right down to it, all of them are useful, but which one is going to get you the data that you need right now so that you can make a decision long-term for somebody's health and wellness? And I just found that this is the simplest, easiest way to do it.
Well, and with the hair tissue mineral analysis, you have to cut out a big chunk of your hair and it has to be like close to the base of your skull. So you're cutting out bald parts, like you're creating baldness, basically, like it grows back. But I remember doing that. And then you have to wait for your results. And like you said, it's the exact same technology, well, but just also, far less.
You know, if you dye your hair, it's going to throw the test off. I'm not going to say half the women, but all the women. It takes out much of the female side of the population. Some of the men as well, as if you're dyeing it or bleaching it, that's going to change it. And that makes it more difficult to get that data.
So how often should someone, like, can you see a difference over months or weeks or days? How often should someone, if they're doing some kind of chelation therapy or detoxification, how often can they test?
About every 3 months. Okay. When I first bought it, I was excited. I did it every month on myself and I saw minimal, if any, changes. And so usually 3 months is about the closest. 3 to 6 months is kind of the sweet spot.
So that's kind of nice that it's not something that you have to do over and over and pay for over and over and over. And it's fairly inexpensive. Like, it's not that much money at all, like a couple hundred dollars just to do the test. And then if like a little bit more for interpretation, which you can do the interpretations and you're training our health coaches and nutritionists to do the interpretations as well. So it's wonderful too, because now when people do our hair analysis and heavy metals come up, they can now just go to this, or if minerals come up, they can just go to this technology and get really specific. I always say the hair analysis is kind of like a big picture that's really blurry. But this now, the oligo scan, is a very specific picture. It's not pixelated at all, but it's a little bit smaller and more concentrated in its areas of minerals and heavy metals. And then there's a few vitamins that it also tests for. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Which ones?
I don't remember.
I know.
I had planned to be prepared with that. And
it's okay. We'll have it on the website.
We'll put it up on the website.
We should have spoken about this in the beginning of the podcast, but we can talk about it now. How do we know if people are mineral deficient or have heavy metal issues? Like, what would be the signs and symptoms of that?
Well, think of it like this. If you're mineral deficient, basically every tissue in your body is going to be less optimal. If your doctor's run all the blood tests, or I've run your blood test and everything is normal and there's no overt smoking guns to say this is your problem, then I would say we need to look more specifically at minerals and see what kinds of things are out of balance. I mean, just even if you look at calcium, magnesium out of balance, the calcium tends to make concrete. That's what we use to harden concrete. But if you've got excessive calcium in your body, you could be actually making kind of a concrete shell over your receptors, which means your thyroid can't tell the cell what to do. Your hormones can't tell the cell what to do. So if you just feel less than optimal, minerals are on the list of things that needs to be carefully looked at. If you can't think, can't process, if you're getting red rashes a lot, actually the sign of arsenic poisoning is a edematous type rash. Certain B vitamins actually have a rash on the skin that correlates with B vitamin deficiency. There's no overt, well, that symptom is a heavy metal or a mineral deficiency. is kind of broad stuff that doesn't really fit into the category of this is the diagnosis, this is the problem. I wish I could tell you it was very simple and cut
right
and dry, but it's actually vague and out of focus.
It doesn't fit in a box. It could kind of just be all over the place. And now my very last question I have is, when it comes to detoxing heavy metals, chelation versus just low and slow, is there a place for chelation?
So the first place is depending on who you are and where you are.
Uh-huh.
So for example, if you're 75 and you have blocked arteries and or you're starting to get dementia, then you want to go fast and furious. You don't have to be done safely, but you want to go fast and furious because you don't have use and time to be able to go low and slow. If you're 25 and your standard routine, which is, you know, doing all the things to help you stay well, is helping you to manage, but you want to upgrade that so that you can continue to improve faster, then you can go low and slow.
Interesting. That's awesome. Do
and
you prefer
middle-aged ones that are harder?
How often would you recommend chelation? I'll be honest. I've seen someone do chelation therapy that put them in hospital, and I've been so apprehensive ever since. And I like the low and slow approach. I'm all about being gentle and respectful of the body. I think you kind of answered my question, but like, what percentage of people have you dealt with that you've put into the chelation lane versus low and slow lane of detoxing?
I would say generously 10 to 15%.
Okay. So it's not that many.
No, not that many. And I've been trained in it. I like it. I think it's a great tool. If you read about it, you'll see good, bad, and ugly.
Yeah.
If you give certain chelators too fast, it can cause heart stopping, which, you know, that's bad.
Terrible.
But the reality is you want to use the best tool for the individual.
Right.
Some people want to go fast and furious. Great. Then we have to make sure that the kidney function is optimal, because otherwise it can be really damaging to the kidneys. That's a known problem.
Right.
You also have to know what you're trying to remove, because if you're trying to remove mercury, but you're using the one that removes lead the best, you're going to remove lead better, but you're not going to be getting the mercury as well, likely we would like to. And there's safer ways. And cost is a concern as well. I mean, a round of chelation is $150 to $250, depending on where you are and who's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing it fast and furious and you're doing it three times a week, you can only use certain chelators that fast and furious. You can't use other chelators. And so there's a number of different protocols. And it's like, I try to match the protocol to the individual of what they can do and what they're willing to do and what they can afford to do.
And then instead of chelators, binders, what are some of your favorite binders for people to use to detox?
Probably one of my most favorite heavy metal removing binders is Ultra Binder from Quicksilver.
Oh, very cool.
Awesome. There's a number of versions of that, but I would say if we're not going to use a medical grade chelator, which is DMPS, DMSA, or EDTA, then my next choice, which is almost everybody, is the Ultra Binder. And there's a number of forms of that because it will remove metals. It just takes out through the bowel, so it's extremely safe.
That's wonderful.
I like Pectisol. It's pretty good. Clay is okay. Charcoal is mediocre. Garlic and onions aren't binders, but they optimize the function. Spirulina and chlorella are mops. They're binders, but they act more like a sponge than a binder. So they just kind of absorb it. Those are actually very nice and very safe. Elantro is actually one that kind of helps to remove mercury. All of those people can do from scratch anytime they want, and they'll do them relatively safely.
I love that. And I love that you gave like good, better, best, so that people can have kind of a variety and like things that we can give our kids too, like the chlorella, the spirulina, like all that. There's a chlorella that I drink that tastes kind of minty and it's sweetened with stevia, and you can like give that to your little kids or something, and that can naturally detox them.
Well, and one that I forgot, zeolite's also a really great binder, and it's really, really safe.
I know that Cellcore also has their HMET, which is a heavy metal binder as well, and it's really, really phenomenal. Their biotoxin binder binds a lot of things, and like all their binders have humic and fulvic acid, so it gives back to the cell as well as takes things out. So it's like putting money in the bank account as well as taking stuff out of the bank account as well. So they're really good in that way. And so those are some of my favorites as well. Listeners, I hope that you learned something new about minerals and heavy metals and like their ratios and how we got into this predicament in the first place. And if you are interested in oligo scans, unfortunately, this isn't something that we can do. We can't send out tests. It's all in person. We can't do remote testing. But if you are local and you are wanting to do the oligo scan, hit us up at Prova Health. You can call our front desk or email us and they can give you more information and get you scheduled. Dr. Wright, any last parting words of wisdom before we close up this episode?
I've said it before, I'll say it again. You can heal. Mm-hmm. Don't settle for, oh, I have this disease. I'm never going to heal from this. If that's death, yeah, I can't fix that. But ultimately, the body can heal if you give it the right opportunity. And so depending on the severity, will just depend on how forcefully you have to do it. But in our world, you have to be actively engaged in your health. You can't do it passively anymore, but you can heal.
You really can. Thank you again for your time and your knowledge. And Gutsy listeners, we'll catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Gutsy Health Podcast. We hope you enjoyed and learned a lot from this episode. For more updates, follow us on Instagram @GutsyHealthPodcast.